Send in the clowns! Welcome to the Film Threat Podcast. I am Chris Gore, joined by Anthony Raybench.
How's it going, everybody?
And special guests, Zach Haddad.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
And Charles De Lazarica.
Hello.
And we've just exited. We just saw it. We just saw it. And I should mention,
what is it?
We saw it. Stephen King's It. And we actually just got out of the screening. We're here at LA Live, where we saw the screening at the Regal Live Cinema. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to figure out where's a good place to record a podcast. And it's like, well, just broke out the microphones and here we are standing at LA Live. So if you hear weirdness in the background, that explains what that is. But what it. Now let's talk about It. We're just going to dive right into It. I have not read the books, and I only vaguely remember the old movie that I think everyone agrees was disappointment.
It's weird. Just a few days ago, I was in Las Vegas with some friends for a bachelor party. And of course, as you do before you go out and hit the town, you watch It on television.
Right, because it was playing.
Yeah, the old Tim Curry version. Was on TV, and wow, was it not good. It has not aged well. I had vague memories of it being on TV as a kid or young adult, and being creeped out by Tim Curry and clown makeup. Because, you know, anytime Tim Curry goes creepy, he's like super creepy. He's awesome when it comes to that. But it's so cheesy and so not scary in any way. In fact, it's kind of like embarrassingly bad funny, that original. So that's why I was kind of hopeful that this new It would really be more faithful to probably Stephen King's vision and certainly be more scary.
Well, so what did we think of It?
Well, I have read the book, and I do have to say that it is a lot more faithful than the, 1990. Okay, actually, here's the thing. It came out in 1990. It's 2017. That's how many years, guys?
Right. Yep.
So that's fun.
Yeah.
But what I will say is that a lot of the violence, a lot of the stuff was just kind of more, obviously, because that was a TV show, or is like a miniseries on TV, I should say, when it came out. But they were able to, with the rating, kind of go there. And I feel like you see that with the kids, you see that with a lot of the gore. And so that was kind of fun.
When you say go there, I think what you mean by that is, one, it's incredibly violent. And not just violent, it's like violent towards children, which I think we haven't seen to this degree since my recollection, Jaws. Yeah. The original Jaws, with the little Kittner boy, like guts is going to pull. So like when you see violence, it's one thing, but you see violence against children or animals, that I think is just more affecting. And additionally, when you say go there, it's the relationships of the kids feel very real to me. Mm. I mean, they're talking about measuring their dicks or like being that like awkward age and are you trying to impress someone or you're trying to not be bullied or it's the weird Wild West of I think that awkward age of junior high, which was actually almost like, I think Charlie, you pointed out, it was like almost like a movie unto itself, like just that aspect of it that was as interesting a storyline as the. Or maybe more interesting.
I think it's more interesting because, like, for me, watching this, look, it's a very handsomely made movie. It's beautifully shot. It's incredibly well cast. I think the direction was phenomenal. I mean, there's nothing bad to say about the craftsmanship of this film. I just felt the horror aspects actually were kind of not nearly as effective as the coming of age aspect of the story. I mean, I loved watching these kids. I loved their interrelationships. I loved their struggles.
The losers?
The losers, yeah.
Yes, the losers.
I was rooting for them at every turn, but never once did I feel like they were in danger, even though they kind of were. I mean, there's definitely plenty of examples, as you say, violence towards kids in the film. But the horror part of it was very visual effects heavy. It was too much, in my opinion, of like too much Pennywise, too much like, hey, how do we find a new way to kind of contort and twist him into some scary, you know, pose.
Well, yeah, I think that the issue may have been, this is a weird, it's just screen time.
Yeah.
There was so much screen time. Like, after a while, you're like, yes, we have seen you a lot. And by seeing, and I know by now that, like, something horrible is going to happen, but it's also going to be, you know.
It's basically like if they made Jaws and the shark worked.
Right, they showed too much of the shark.
If the shark worked, that shark would have been all over that movie. The fact that the shark didn't work made that film the masterpiece that it is, because it was left to your imagination. This film doesn't leave much to your imagination when it comes to Pennywise or the other kind of horror elements. They're beautifully executed, no doubt about it. The artistry on display is fantastic. It's just that I really enjoyed the kid's story more because it felt honest, it felt real, it felt true, whereas all of like the kind of clown effects, you know, it was like... As I mentioned earlier, it was like Goonies Goes to Hell. You know, it was like a bunch of cool kids you like going to a really scary fun house, but eventually they leave the fun house and they're high five and, you know, everything's fine.
It's funny that you brought up Jaws, because I haven't read the book since I was like 12. Zach, when was the last time you read the book?
I was like 15 or 16.
Yeah. You might be able to validate this. There isn't a lot of Pennywise in the book, actually, like as the clown. He more manifests as their fears, and I would have liked to see more of that, because that's not, you know, the weird, goofy CG stuff.
Yeah, that's... go ahead.
Yeah, like, I would have liked to see more of the leper kind of stalking in the background. Every time they showed it up close, I was like, oh, God.
That was exactly my thought. Give me more of the leper. I wasn't thinking...
Fair enough.
But, like, yeah, Pennywise,
play
I think...
on their fear more.
Right.
With the clown.
The one thing that really scared... the thing that came closest to scaring me was that twisted woman or whatever it was in the painting.
Right,
that painting creature thing. That kind of almost got me scared. Not quite, but almost.
Not me. I was the opposite. I was like, that's the dumbest looking thing in this movie.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I couldn't get behind it.
When I see uneven eyes and face and things like that, especially because it was, you know, it kind of reminded me of the nun in Conjuring 2 in a way. It was like this kind of like creepy specter, but like it's so wrong in every possible way. And yet there it is. In quote unquote reality of the situation, so
like a thing that shouldn't physically exist in the real world is just right there in front of you, you know, contorting and whatnot. It was a little like what I did like. It was the era that it was set, which was 1988, 89, 90, sort of that period of time, which was really great. I mean, it was sort of like, is this the last innocence? You know, it was. I mean, just some of the. You know, they went, they don't go skinny dipping, but they go like in their pretty close, like in their underwear out in a, you know, it wasn't a lake,
quarry,
more of a quarry. It was very, it reminded me of Breaking Away a little bit, which is a underrated film that everyone has forgotten about except for me and Charlie, because he's nodding and he knows what Breaking Away is.
Well, of course, there's a connection between Breaking Away and It. Which is in the 1990 version, Dennis Christopher was in that.
Ah.
And he was also in Breaking Away. So it all comes together.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, no, I just, Breaking Away, like a film that, God, I remember when it came out, was like a phenomenon. It was incredible. And that movie's gone virtually forgotten, unfortunately. It's, I don't know. I just, that just is a classic still to me.
I feel the same way about The Artist. Does anybody talk about The Artist anymore?
No.
Exactly. You know, but that movie 1 year, like, won all sorts of stuff, right? And had like a bunch of fanfare and
well,
Oscars
there's gonna be the Artist connected universe. I think that's
gonna be
coming never.
Then they're gonna reboot it.
It's gonna be the movie with just the dog.
Yeah. But this movie has gotten a lot of play just in a viral sense with the campaign with the red balloon. Have you seen like they're like little red balloons, like tied in odd places just around. And there's that It experience, which is at the corner of Hollywood and Vine, where you have to have an appointment to go. And it's kind of like one of those things that you would see at Comic-Con, except this isn't at Comic-Con. It's actually like right there for anyone in the public to go to.
I actually have a story about this.
Okay, so did you go to it?
Yes.
It experience? So
yes. Okay, so a couple nights ago, me and some friends went to Scum and Villainy right there in Hollywood. And as we're leaving, there is, somebody in a slicker. It's this, like, kind of little lady in a yellow slicker. But on her back is Pennywise. It's, like, a little, like, like robotic kind of puppet thing that's just walking around with her. And we're like, what's going on? And she's like, you all float down here, which that's all they say. But like right around the corner is this It house. But as this is happening and this woman's walking around with the slicker, one of my friends freaks the fuck out. Just goes mental. She's like, oh my God, I don't want to see this movie. And she just runs across Hollywood just like trying to get away from traffic, and her boyfriend's like, I gotta go follow her. And it was just kind of from like, you know, being drunk and ridiculous. Well, but like it freaked her out that much, and I was like, oh, she didn't even go inside the house.
Well, I mean,
which
look,
we then did
between Killer Clowns from Outer Space,
yeah.
It the new season of American Horror Story,
oh, yeah.
Poltergeist,
yeah.
Like
uh-huh.
They're clowns. I mean, you cannot be a working clown. This is basically put clowns out of business. Although yeah. I do remember there was a study, which was actually done. They asked 200 children, "Do you want a clown for your birthday party?" And 100% of the children said no. And this was like a study that was being done to like promote, like have a clown at your birthday party. Kids do not like clowns.
That's the best campaign.
I feel
right
like
there.
He, between Heath Ledger as the Joker in Dark Knight and all the, you know, clown. I mean, clowns are now.
Does anybody remember John Wayne Gacy though?
Right, even John Wayne Gacy. I mean, like clowns are now an image of horror. Clowns are not associated with delight and being nice to kids. It's a mask worn by creepy clowns that want to kill you.
But I have to say, it's also become kind of a cliche. I think that
right.
Scary clowns. Like maybe, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, that was something I think would genuinely be scary. But now I just feel like it's been done so much. I mean, watching it today, I was thinking, wow, again, beautifully made. But I feel like I've seen so much of this in other variations before, which is why, again, like the horror elements, the visual effects elements, as beautiful as they were, didn't resonate with me as much as the human story did, which I think is actually a testament to the filmmakers that they managed to connect on a human level in spite of all the razzmatazz going on screen, which there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of really, you know, beautifully executed visual effects. Just, man, the human component was so much better.
Well, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up, because if you actually cut out all the whole clown monster scary,
you would have a good movie.
You'd have a movie
yeah.
about a young boy
yeah.
that lost his little brother.
Yeah.
His little brother went missing, and there's no explanation for it.
I would love to see an experimental edit of it with all the Pennywise stuff, all the visual effects stuff taken out, and just see if it still works. Like in some ways, it might
yeah.
even be scarier, frankly, just to see hints of like, you know, the drain in the street, and just like, but not see anything of Pennywise. I would just love to, as it might not work, but as an experiment, I would love to see that.
It played on these fears that I had forgotten that I had as a kid, which is, can you just go get that thing in the basement? And one of the young characters, Georgie, is walking into the basement, and the sounds you hear, the sound of a furnace, the sound of like, what's that dripping in the background?
Those three
sounds,
like reflections.
Yeah. Was that a creature? It's like, no, it's just, you know, light bouncing the wrong way. It's just like those weird fears as a kid that, you know, maybe
yeah.
you still have some of those fears. I don't know.
And one other thing I want to say is that, you know, there's been a lot of attempts at 80s nostalgia in the last X number of years because, you know, a lot of us are 80s kids. We love the 80s. We love the movies of the 80s. We want to recapture that. And I feel like, you know, we've seen that quite a few times now. This one, to me, has been the best of the kind of 80s nostalgia wave because in terms of recapturing
oh, right.
what it was like to be a kid in the 80s. I believed every single one of these actors. I believe they actually were living in the 80s, even though they're not. I just think it did a really terrific job. I mean, forget like the little details of the movie marquee with Batman and Lethal Weapon 2 on it. It's like, yeah, those are nice touches, but that's easy. Like, you can do that. Stranger Things does that like every 5 seconds, right? They have a really great thing in the background. This, to me, just captured life. It wasn't
right.
about the gloss or the artifice or the gift wrapping of the 80s. It was what's the actual gift, what's in the package. I thought this did a really great job.
And also, like, the strangeness of parents and adults. Like, what are the jobs that parents have? What are they doing? These are like weird mysteries as a little kid, like, you know, that I remember thinking about. I don't know. I feel like I'm really in touch with my inner child and can kind of go back to that pretty easily. But that's something that it played on also with the characters, is that the adults in the story, I mean, they're really few adult characters that of significance, right? And
they're all pretty shitty one way or another.
Right, they are.
They literally do nothing
One's
to
like,
help any
hey,
situations.
Hey, stop looking after your brother who's been missing for a year. You got to get over it. Or like, hey, I'm kind of maybe rapey. I don't know. Like, there's all sorts of weird characters in this, parent-wise.
Yeah, that's
that out of context just sounds weird, right? But that's fine.
No, but yeah, it does make sense. Now, do we want to get into spoilers at all? I feel like we've talked, like, we haven't really gotten into spoilers. We're talking about, like, but, like, I mean, before we do that, we're not going to do spoilers at the moment. But, what worked, what didn't work for everybody?
I mean, it's kind of the same thing that we've all been talking about here, is that the focus on effects in modern horror sometimes can be a mixed bag. And while I did think that there were some scares that worked, like I did jump a couple times, to be honest with you, but there was a lot of things that didn't really work with me in terms of the effects usage in that. And,
well, I think it's digital has become a crutch.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a short list of directors I feel that are able to restrain themselves. And I think Chris Nolan being among them, where digital is used, like this is the only way it can be achieved, or it's used as an enhancement or digital removal of other elements. I feel like that's a good use of digital. But when it's something actually looks digital, I feel like it's no longer scary.
Yeah.
It's no longer scary because it no matter how great digital effects are, still your brain just processes it as that's a digital effect. It can't hurt me. You know, it's I don't know. I feel that it's when used in horror too much, like a digital. This is my argument where I don't like, and I think the DC movies are most guilty of this, is when the main villain is a digital effect.
Yeah.
I feel it has no, I feel like some of the greatest villains in movie history have been played by people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even Emperor Palpatine, right? Yeah. Scary was an actor in makeup. And sometimes the makeup, you could see the seams, and it's still, no one noticed that.
Yeah, exactly.
They were focused on the performance of Ian McDiarmid, so.
I will say, though, I did like that scene of Beverly in the bathroom of just everything exploding blood, and it did feel like almost like a little bit of like a young Sam Raimi moment. I feel like with the hair coming out of this, like it was a little too gratuitous, a little too much at first, but initially I'm like, oh, this is a cool effect, and it was very visceral, but like that was one of the only moments I was like, oh, this at least feels real. This is a tangible, gross moment that, you know, was by comparison better than all of those other effects.
Speaking of that scene, though, the other movie that came to mind was The Shining. And not just the movie, but the teaser trailer with all the blood coming down out of the elevator. And that, to me, is still a bajillion times more terrifying.
Yeah.
It's the music. It's sort of like the unexplained nature of it. It's like you can dump gallons of blood in any scene, and unless there's some sort of like deeper level to it, it's just a visual effect. It's just blood.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that. Why is The Shining, not just that scene, but the whole movie, another Stephen King adaptation, which King famously does not like, it's so, to this day, powerful, effective, scares the hell out of me, even though I've seen it a million times. And it's because, I think it's because it's psychological. I think it cuts into a much deeper level than mere entertainment. This, to me, is great entertainment. I mean, I would recommend it, that people go see it. But it is very easily digestible. You know, it's like it's an easy horror film. You can definitely be scared. You can definitely kind of like be into it and kind of ride it like you would a roller coaster. But it's a roller coaster. It's not a walk in the woods. It's not like something where you get truly terrified. It's a fun house.
Well, yeah, no, yeah, I agree. Definitely fun. And I want to point out also with The Shining, correct me if I'm wrong, not one digital effect.
That you're correct.
This
is before any of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But it definitely felt like a ride, and I was entertained as I was watching it. I even tried to scare Anthony once because we were sitting next to each other.
You hit me really hard in the arm.
Did I? Well, I was trying to like go like a typical cheesy.
I thought I was getting attacked. Like I was getting punches.
No, but well, I see. Okay, yeah. All right. I'm the jump scare. I just wanted to give you the jump scare, but also as a brother with sisters, that was my forte, was to freak out my sister by trying to scare her with cheap gags like that.
See, I hate jump scares, and I think this movie was way too heavy on them. Like, most of them were predictable.
Yeah,
I think, like, the ones that got me weren't even like, oh, they got me. It was just like, oh, I wasn't expecting them to do that. I was expecting them to do this. One scene that was really effective for me was the projector scene. I loved that. I ate that up. It didn't scare me, like, you know, but I was just, I really liked the effect of, like, Pennywise kind of, like, growing monstrous in this, like, small enclosed room or garage, if you will. I loved that. That was, like...
It's in the trailer, too, that scene, or portion of that scene.
Yeah, portion of it, but, like, in even then, I didn't expect it to go into that. Like, I was just like, oh, he's gonna, you know... Rawr, into the camera, and then, but he just grows into this massive, like, crazy creature, and I was like, oh, this is awesome.
Speaking of jump scares, and to go to yet another example of a better jump scare that has no visual effects at all, is The Exorcist 3, which is, for my money...
Oh, I love The Exorcist 3.
The Exorcist 3 still, for my money, has the best jump scare of all time, that hospital hallway scene. When I first saw that, I didn't see Exorcist 3 until it hit VHS. Mm-hmm. And when I did, and that scene came up, I had to rewind it like 9 times to desensitize myself to it, because I would not be able to sleep that night with that jump scare in mind. This movie has a ton of jump scares, and they're effective, but man, there's just something about reality that horror desperately needs. And you can have all the power in the world to create whatever great visuals you want. The shots of the well at the end and the kids floating. Beautiful. I mean, like, truly beautiful imagery. And yet, I'm just sitting there, like, passively watching this thing, and wow, that's really pretty. It's a beautiful shot. Incredibly well done. Bravo. But at no time, I'm sitting on the edge of my seat thinking, oh, fuck, you know, I'm really scared. So that's the difference between, I think, like, 70s horror and earlier. And then you get into the 80s, where it gets a little bit more Amazing Stories, Tales from the Crypt, kind of like EC Comics fun. And I don't think we've ever quite recovered from that in terms of studio horror film. Indie horror has gone all over the place, which is great. But studio horror, I think, has gotten kind of into this sort of, like, very digestible, easy, again, kind of like carnival-type horror.
I'm just glad we're not stuck in the who did it's of the late 90s and early 2000s. Like, I'm glad to see, like, actual, like, ghost stories again.
But this is, like, those this is... Nice. I feel like this is sort of two podcasts in one, because I think we've determined that entertaining, but, you know, sort of lacking in deeper layers. But let's get into the spoiler stuff, because, you know, as we were walking out, I think everyone at the screening we were at enjoyed the film. But at the end, I'm walking out going, like, so we have two characters that killed their parents. I'm assuming everyone who's listening to this has seen the movie now, if you're listening to the second half, or read the book. Yeah, the second half of this podcast. But yeah, so we have two characters who killed their parents, and also we have this thing that goes unexplained, where we have the floating people that are floating. Georgie is not among those floating, so it's not like, I think I was mentioned to you that it's like, it's not like the end of Close Encounters, where everybody just gets returned to their loved ones in some blue light hug, you know, ending that, you know, one might expect. I thought it was going there, and I'm glad it didn't do that, but I didn't completely get the logic. So the creature was attracted to the fear, somehow attracted that and fed off of the fear of each of those characters, which is why it manifested visions of the thing that each of those characters feared the most, and so it fed off that fear. To what end?
That was a throwaway line. The in the book, the creature actually consumes them, but the reason
consumes
why...
Consumes them how? Like, just
like
eats
physically
them?
Consumes their body and their soul. And he explains, like, the fear thing is, like, it's salting the meat. Like, the more he scares them, the better they taste. That's why he plays mind games with them. That's why he kills some kids, so all the kids are kind of afraid. It's kind of like a Freddy Krueger type thing, where, you know, the more the kids are afraid of him, the more powerful he is, the more, you know, awesome, tasty kid meat you get.
But you never see what the actual creature looks like. You see sort of this mouthy thing, this sort of mouth with endless teeth.
He's
looks
a spider.
Like the inside of a dune sandworm. It's a spider?
He's a giant spider.
Giant spider, basically.
Giant spider.
Pennywise is just his favorite form to take on, but it is not his true form, which, there you go.
Oh, and it is from outer space.
Stephen King and his Coke. like habit. That's pretty much what it is. Yeah.
What? Yeah. He does not have a coke habit.
He had a massive coke habit.
Really? Did he ever talk about it?
Oh yeah. He's talked about it quite a bit.
I have to admit, I've not read every Stephen King book, but the ones I have read, he has. It's interesting. He has an amazing way of hooking you in beautifully. I mean, he hooks you in better than anybody, and he maintains that for quite a while, setting up what you think is going to be this incredible third act payoff. And pretty much every book of his I've read, and even a lot of the movies that have been adapted, cannot stick the landing. They something goes awry in the third act, or something silly comes out of nowhere. I mean, my favorite Stephen King book is The Stand. I mean, I love that so much, but that ridiculous ending. I mean, what was like 80% a masterpiece, that 20% or even 15% of it is so devastatingly bad, it almost makes me rethink the rest of the book, which is why I've always been curious if they would ever be able to make a compelling feature version of The Stand, the miniseries set aside for a second. Like, I do believe you could make a compelling feature, but you got to figure out that third act. And the same with It. I thought this third act was like, first of all, I thought the film was a bit too long. That was like maybe 10, 15 minutes, a bit too long. But that final showdown felt, again, very like it was like the super boss level in a video game. I just felt like it was just a little too distanced from the reality that we've been so in love with up until that point.
Yeah, that third act just didn't exactly work for me either. It just, but also, am I the only person that had all these questions? I'm sure, didn't you guys have the same questions? Or it just felt like there was first I was just trying to connect the logic, and I'm like, all right, I'll just buy into the logic of the film. But I
can answer another one of your
please
questions.
Answer something so, involving a turtle. Am I wrong? explain
so
that
the
one.
The bully that killed his dad actually, obviously at the end of this, they tease that this is chapter one because, you know, the book takes place in two parts with the kids, and then later on they confront the entity as an adult. In chapter two, when they're adults, that kid is in a mental institution. Like, he's like catatonic, and the occurrences that happen kind of wake him up, and he goes back to Derry and kind of confronts the kids. So, I mean, that's going to be touched on later on.
So wait, there's going to be an It sequel?
Yeah.
With the kids as adults?
They're already working on that.
Pre-production,
apparently.
And it's set present day?
Yes.
That's actually kind of cool. Mm-hmm. I like that idea. So, yeah, but no one else had the same sort of nagging questions. I'm just thinking, assume you have not read the book.
Yeah.
Okay, because most people going into this movie, let's be honest, haven't read the book. Mm-hmm. They're seeing the movie.
Read it in a long time.
Right, yeah. Seeing the movie fresh. They've seen the marketing. They've seen creepy clowns. I hate that. I'll go see that. I want to, so they're going to have these questions. If you only are living in the logic of the movie, a lot of things just didn't connect for me, especially having to do with the ending.
Yeah.
Well, we should have stayed for the post-credit scene, right?
Was there a post-credit scene?
No, I'm just saying that shit.
I'm going to be really mad at this.
Just all the kids and what do we do now? We just floated down, and then it just cuts to black.
I think they actually do reveal the adult actors at the end of it, and they're all eating shawarma at the end.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Or it's Captain America giving a whole speech about patience.
Yeah.
Oh, that was probably the best Marvel button.
I was howling at that one. That was so funny.
They just what is it? Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
In the book, I don't think Beverly actually kills her dad. I think he's still alive. But
did she kill her dad, or was that a vision?
I don't know. Yeah, that's what I thought. And then she goes to live with her aunt.
Yeah. And then she comes back to meet up with all the losers.
Yeah.
I don't remember her killing.
Because, dad's raping her. Not a good thing.
He looked pretty dead
in
this movie.
He was pretty, that stuff just, I thought was, you pointed out, Charlie, forget Pennywise and the digital effects and whatnot. There's actual horror that these kids have to deal with. Mm-hmm. The bullying, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, those bullies were creepy.
Horrible parents. The loss of a loved one and trying to deal with that. So there's actual real life horror that a lot of the characters were dealing with in their old the sort of pudgy kid who was kind of I really identified with him.
He was my favorite.
He was so good.
I totally identified with him. I mean,
yeah,
John Ritter played the adult version of him in the miniseries.
Yeah,
that was John Ritter
with his black leather vest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I totally identified with him, and I felt sorry for him because it's like I feel like he put in the most work.
Right.
You know, towards winning over everybody, but especially the girl. I thought like he really earned it in terms of like his place in the group. And I feel like everyone else just kind of like fit their molds, you know, but he really tried, you know.
He got stabbed like a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sliced.
Yeah. God. And that scene where the bullies, you know, they're doing target practice with a gun and they line up the cat to shoot the cat.
Oh yeah.
That was dark, man. That was some dark shit. That actually scared me more than anything.
But yeah. I knew creepy dudes like that. And what was weird was is then you began to see like where the seeds of the bullying came from, which is abuse from his own father. So you had many of the parents, you know, abusing their children in some form or another. So, I mean, that was, and I remember I had not a similar experience that, but I remember just this bully that was just so annoying in school. And then finally seeing the relationship with his father and that kid. And I saw like, oh, that's where the bullying comes from. Like, I remember like that sort of moment of understanding of like, oh, and empathy for like, oh, he's getting it far worse at home than I'm getting it from him during school. I feel like that's kind of a recurring thing.
You know, that scene just made me like smile, like because I literally did stuff like this as a kid. The rock fight scene.
Yeah. Oh yeah, like, that was great.
This feels so genuine and like,
and even like the music. Mm-hmm. Like they actually made it like a like again. It started off as an incredibly tense, potentially deadly situation, and it became like this kind of fun memory from childhood. You know.
The only thing missing was like somebody needed to get hit in the eye, and then I'm gonna tell Mom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you're going to pay for the hospital bills.
Yeah.
Does anyone does anyone still use that? Hello? Is this thing on? Nothing.
I loved the profanity. I thought the kids were, I mean, that was like hard R profanity from little kids. That was so much fun. And actually, again, realistic, you know, it felt so real.
I feel like it did feel very Stranger Things, which let's, you know, to be fair, this you know, predates Stranger Things.
Yeah. I mean, but one of the actors, one of the kids is
One of the actors is in both, exactly. And so, but yeah, it did have that Stranger Things kind of vibe in a way. But so, I don't know. I think that's popular now.
It's interesting. These are almost like two sides of the same coin. I think that Stranger Things gets the supernatural stuff right. Like, it gets that stuff better.
Because it had a logic to it.
It had a logic to it. It had a very interesting new universe we hadn't quite seen before. So the supernatural side of Stranger Things, I find fascinating in a way that maybe the domestic drama part it's fine, it's serviceable, but the underside to it all is really, really fascinating. This was the opposite. This, to me, the underbelly of the town and Pennywise was fine, was serviceable. It was the family life of the kids that I thought was super compelling. And again, I would love to see a non-Pennywise version of the movie.
Someone should cut that, do like a fan cut. I think that would totally work. That would be great. So what's the final verdict across the board here of the convening of the four?
I personally think that I'm a one-and-done kind of guy with that one. I agree with Charlie saying that it's easily digestible. It totally is. It had a couple good moments, but I'd give it, say, if we're going out of five, I'd give it like a 2.5.
Hey, well, easily digestible. You know what? Almost like a little children to a giant spider from outer space.
Right.
Digestible.
Man, so, when he like rips off Georgie's arm like in that drain, I thought that was crazy.
I mean, that as an opening is. Yeah, I like, mean, that's, you know.
And here's fucked up children stuff now.
Yeah. The only thing that might have been better is the opening of Jaws. You know, I mean, just like and just in terms of the shock value and I think really prepared you for what was coming. I mean, I would just on my scale, I would recommend actually seeing this movie in the theater. I feel like it's worth it. It's you know, look, it's not going to change your life. It's not going to, you know, win Oscars, but I mean, a good time at the movies for sure. And you're going to come out probably like we have on this podcast with a lot of questions that remain unanswered. And maybe that's actually a good, you know, knowing that now that I didn't know about the part two, I feel like that now I feel satisfied because I feel like those unanswered questions will be addressed in part two. I mean, I'm just assuming in the book it was like, I mean, it just didn't fully explain everything. And maybe as kids, they didn't understand, but understand it, but now as adults can return and seek those answers. So yeah, I actually, I'm not going to say I highly recommend it, but like, look, go to the movies and be scared. Why are they? Look, if you're actually even hearing me say this, you have already seen the movie because we have gone through so many spoilers. We ruined the entire film for you. So
again, based on a book that's been out for decades.
Right, right, yeah. So,
I would see it again, but probably not any more than that.
At a drive-in?
Yeah, definitely. A drive-in. Love the drive-in.
Yeah,
that's a good call. Yeah,
no, that would be a good drive-in movie.
I would give it like a 3 out of 5. Like the, you know, like Charlie was saying, I think what everybody, you know, kind of agrees on. The kids are great. That relationship, that dynamic is really strong. Scares, not so much. You know, I really didn't like the digital scares. So, I don't know.
All right.
I mean, I don't really have a score in mind. You know, sometimes when I have mixed feelings about movies, it's a love-hate thing. This is a love-like thing. It's like, again, love the human side, only like the supernatural side. I recommend it. I definitely think people should see it in a theater because, again, it's so beautifully made. The sound design is incredible. It's a visual experience that I think will not be as satisfying on TV, even a big screen, or your phone, which I think a lot of people will probably see this on a plane or whatever. But I just think go see it with a big, packed audience and go for the ride. And just don't expect anything more than a ride. It's just another really cool attraction to the theme park that you're gonna enjoy. You're going to probably scream a little bit, maybe. You're going to come off thinking, wow, that was really cool. Maybe we'll see it again. Maybe we won't. I don't know.
You know what it is? It's like, you know what it is, actually? It's like the movie, because now we're coming up on Halloween season. I break out my Halloween decorations about October 1st, end of September, October 1st, and then sort of leave them up for a long time. But it reminded me of, it's sort of the movie version of a maze. You know, when you go to like,
yeah, I thought the same
you know, not Scary Farm or Universal,
like escape rooms,
Horror
and
Nights,
things, yeah.
Escape rooms. It reminded me of like, oh, this is just someone took like all the fun of those mazes. Like, I'm going to go around this corner. No, there's a scary thing. I'm going to open this closet. No, there's a scary thing. I'll go into this bathroom. No, there's blood everywhere. It's like, it basically was the movie version of a maze. And on that note or on that scale, do you guys have like a Halloween or a horror film that you could recommend that might not be at the top of everyone's list? I mean, you know, at the top of everyone's list is probably John Carpenter's original Halloween. I mean, that, you know, having seen that back in the day, I mean, from the score to Jamie Lee Curtis to everything about the original Halloween, love that movie. But I'm saying one that would not be one that everyone knows about, like one like that people would have a sense of discovery.
I mean, I already said it before. The Exorcist 3, I think, is a really great unsung gem of a horror film. It's smart. It's witty. Scary as hell. It's not perfect, but what it does magnificently. You always do this. You always, like, throw these curveballs.
Oh, throw out, like,
no preparation, no time to even think about it.
Yeah, but that's a conversation. This would be like a normal conversation we would have. And then you would,
Being recorded for
No, it doesn't matter. No one listens to the Film Threat Podcast. Look, if you listen to the Film Threat Podcast, send a self-addressed stamp envelope to Film Threat 5042 Wilshire Boulevard, PMB 1500, Los Angeles, California 90036. Send a self-addressed stamp envelope. Put a postage on it. I'll send you a DVD. If there's enough postage for a DVD, I'll mail you back one. I'll mail you stickers or whatever. Because that just proves that you... Or you know what? If you did listen to the Film Threat Podcast, just tweet at Film Threat. I listened to the Film Threat Podcast when you talked about that one part of the podcast when you said... no one listens, but some people do.
You're insulting our 13 fans.
Right. I would say this one actually, you know what? A lot of people do know about. It Follows is one that like has stuck with me. That has really stuck with me. I love I'm a big stickler for just logic in films. It has to follow its own rules, and It Follows creates a set of rules that, I really love that movie. Plus the fact that it's a beautiful looking film, and it's I just, the relationships felt authentic to me.
I agree with your comment about the logic in It Follows. I think I love It Follows. Mm-hmm. I think it's a fantastic film. The logic seems to get a little wobbly again in the third act when they get to the pool.
But that's every movie logic. Yeah. They go, okay, here's the rules we set, and now it's third act, so we're going to throw you some curveball that you didn't expect. Right. Every movie does that.
But I do think It Follows is another like kind of gem that maybe a lot of people don't think about because it's an indie film. But I do think it's been certainly well celebrated in like the last few years that it's been out. There's something about slow walking, like evil, like whether it's It Follows or Michael Myers or the zombies in Romero's dead movies. I mean, what is it about slow walkers? Because in this film, we didn't really we didn't get that. We got like this kind of like Jacob's Ladder, head shaky, kind of like violently racing at you kind of thing. What's scarier, slow or fast?
I'm going to say slow. I'd say slow. That's slow. I mean, like, because I think it's that anticipation. It's the, and also I think there's something about that harkens to a dreamlike state. Because just, I think a lot of things that are scary are primal fears that we have. And if you just think about your dreams, I mean, you know, things move slowly in a dream. Things are, you know, you're running, but it's like the sensation of trying to run in Jell-O, a vat of Jell-O, like Twin Peaks. Oh my gosh, yes. Well, I mean, I think no one better captures the dream state better than David Lynch. I mean, his Eraserhead to me, just, you know, I saw that as a kid, as a high schooler. It just blew my mind at midnight screenings of it. And I was just obsessed with seeing that movie over and over again, returning to see it and just being blown away by it. It really is a dream state where nothing, there is no logic. That's the thing is like David Lynch's rules, there are no rules because it's dream logic. And in that, anything is possible. But things do connect in weird ways. We could go on. We should do a separate podcast about Twin Peaks, because yes, we should, for sure. But any other Halloween or horror film recommendations? Something not on a top 10 list, but you would recommend?
Oh, yeah, for sure, Hocus Pocus. No, I'm kidding. That was a fun one, I guess, for Halloween. No, but Charlie, you actually mentioned probably one of my more favorite ones is Jacob's Ladder. I love that movie. I feel like it's a classic, and it's maybe not on a lot of people's radars. I mean, if you like film, you've probably seen it, but I've asked every one of my friends, and none of them have seen it, which is weird. I mean, they're just, I don't know, but I love that.
They're not your friends. Those people are not your friends if they don't know that movie.
But, like, specifically the party scene in that film with, like, the Jezebel character, like,
the lizard tail.
Yeah, with all that stuff, and then, yeah, the horn going through her mouth. Yeah, like that to me is a pretty damn good jump, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's animatronics, that it's a real tangible thing as opposed to, you know, a visual effect. And I feel that we need more of that sort of thing in horror, so we're not, you know, all just talking about a lot of old movies over and over again, so we have something new that's progressing. I mean, I love talking about old movies, don't get me wrong, but like, what if we had, you know, kind of more of, I don't know where I'm going with this, but
no, but
more practical effects.
Yeah, more practical effects basically, yeah. I guess is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. All right. Do you have a recommendation?
Yeah. Charlie took mine. It was Exorcist 3. I love that movie. But my backup is a movie called Low, L-O. It's this really cool movie. It's not really scary, but it's got the kind of like Pennywise-esque, like kind of jester fooling around with, you know, mortals type thing. It's about this guy who basically like draws a pentagram in the middle of the room, summons a demon, and like just has like this conversation and tries to... I don't want to give anything away, but it's really good. And the other one is Behind the Mask, the story of Leslie Verner. I love that movie. Again, it's not really a strict horror, but it goes straight slasher at the end. But I love horror movies that kind of play with the genre and don't really just do stuff that's already been done before.
We were talking about Jacob's Ladder. That made me think of Adrian Lyne, which then made me think of Alan Parker, which then made me think of Angel Heart. Angel Heart. And that's another kind of really elegant, adult, intelligent horror film that, you know, I think people who love movies know it very well, but people who maybe don't, aren't like cinephiles or don't really follow, let's say, upscale horror films, Angel Heart is certainly one that I would highly recommend.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, hey guys, so that wraps up our It podcast. Where can we find you all on social media? Because this is now how every podcast ends, right? Like,
Charlie DeLazarica speaking.
Yes.
I'm at on Twitter at Lazarica, which is LAUZIRIKA. Yeah.
I don't really use my Twitter that often.
You're a wise man.
Yeah. I do, however, have Instagram, and it's the Z Haddad, HADDAD. Sometimes people don't get that one, but I'm on there, the Z Haddad. That's about it. Don't really use any other social media.
Cool.
At This Game Cheats on Twitter. That's it.
And if you're still listening, Film Threat on everything. And like we like to end the show, let's get out of here.
Did it float? Oh, yes. They float, Georgie. They float. And when you're down here with me, you float down!
We really got to get out of here.